Always like when I have the commonality of something else to talk about in Coeur d'Alene, because we're going to talk about Coeur d'Alene and art in Coeur d'Alene, because the formula for art openings and art happenings in Coeur d'Alene tends to be the second Friday of the month, and that is tonight, exactly. And so here are folks from the Art Spirit Gallery. We'll spend some time with Blair Williams, who is in charge of that gallery, and then the two artists who are featured, Pat Seiler and Tandon Lunder. In the course of the next while, let's begin with Blair Williams. Good morning, Blair.
Good morning, Vern.
And maybe just kind of a quick state of the gallery, because I haven't talked to you in the last few months. You've been through a Christmas season and a few of some great shows and some of your iconic people that you have. How the last few months gone?
They've been really spectacular. Thank you. We tried something new this year. We eliminated our November show and, in fact, opened our December holiday show earlier, the week before Thanksgiving, and it was a huge success.
Yeah, well, that's the wise thing to do, because to spend a moment with the business of art, there are a lot of different reasons people buy art for themselves, for others, and obviously the gift part, which you're alluding to. But spend a minute talking about the range of people's motivations for the art that they want to acquire.
Well, you know, we're seeing a change in audience in the gallery sector as a whole, in fact, worldwide these days. Many of our past buyers, those who helped to fund or found, if you will, organizations like the National Endowment for the Arts or even public radio and NPR and those kinds of things, they're aging out now and they're downsizing and we're not seeing them buy as much. What is interesting about that is that we've also seen a generation or three that have been raised surrounded by art and with an assumption that it will always be there. And they are now becoming our new collectors, and they are different collectors. So we're seeing a different motivation, if you will, as to buying.
If you dare talk a little bit about those differences.
Yeah. You know, first and foremost, I think that the prior audience I was talking about felt their need to be a part of the grassroots movement to build these institutions, and they knew that if they wanted to see galleries thriving in their communities, they themselves needed to purchase the art and support the artists in order to keep those sort of things alive. And my fear is that we now have generations that just assume that the galleries and the museums will always be there without that support, not recognizing what their parents and grandparents, in fact, put forth. So the new up-and-coming audience is generally more interested in experiences and not things. And how does that relate to the art world as a whole? In fact, the New York Times just sponsored April of 2018 an amazing conference in Berlin in which they spoke of just these issues that are coming forth for both artists and galleries and museums worldwide and how they're facing it. To answer the question that you asked specifically, though, Vern, how are we seeing the new audience respond and what are they looking for? We find that we have to wait until they get to nesting period, you know, until they begin to build their home and settle and have a family. And then they recognize, oh, maybe I want to begin to build my own theme of art in my home, and I'm used to being surrounded by the artwork that my parents selected. What of those artists do I love and respect, and which of the new up-and-coming artists are speaking to me? And so that's been a really interesting balance for us, finding new artists like Tandon or Jeff Weir, Chase Halland, and others who are young themselves and in that period of time, and the relationship that they're building. And it's really a wonderful thing. If we nurture it such, we're seeing the opportunity to build those audiences that, you know, for so many years have supported and continue to support the Harold Belays and the Mel McCuddens of our region. Now we have a new audience, and we're helping them find what it is they like.
And this current exhibit, which is opening tonight, mm-hmm. I'm spending time with right now with Blair Williams. What's your actual title?
The owner of
the Art Spirit Gallery.
Luckiest girl in the world.
Yeah, and on Sherman Avenue in Coeur d'Alene. Jumping Off is the title you put to this show with two artists, Pat Seiler and Tandon Lundaire.
Why jumping off? Because jumping off really indicates the start of a story, if you will. Mm-hmm. And both Tandon and Patrick's work are deep in story that they tell. It goes beyond just the singular theme or iconic muse of mm-hmm. the work, of the mm-hmm. clay, of the painting, of the mixed media that Tandon does. There's really a deeper backstory when you begin to look. When you're looking at Patrick's work, if you look at his woodblock.
Actually, I want to interrupt you for a minute. No, because I forgot to say this. You listener, if you care to go to theartspiritgallery.com, theartspiritgallery.com, or Google will help you along. And then under the current show, the exhibitions, you can easily click on it, and you will have pages and pages of the art of these two people. And so you can you can let your eyes follow where your ears are taking you. So it's theartspiritgallery.com. Okay, now.
Thank you. We'll do our best to continue to describe art over the radio.
Certainly. Yeah.
So if you could look at, let's say, Pat's, there are two examples that I'll give, actually three in this current exhibit that I think showcase the jumping off. The first would be in the woodblock pieces. If you go to them, you'll see the initial story jump out at you. Maybe it's the bug coming out from the earth and unpacking his art supplies. But it's not until you spend time really with the piece to notice the different elements in the background or the story that's being told. My second favorite of Pat's are the oil paintings that are framed in wood frames that are quite thick. In fact, I don't remember the depth of them right offhand, but let's say 6 inches deep. And you have the initial painting on oil, of oil on canvas, and then the story continues from the canvas carved out onto the frame and around the corner of the frame. And you can't help but find yourself wanting to jump off and figure out what the rest of the story is.
So let's at that point bring Pat into the conversation. Good morning, Patrick Seiler.
Good morning, mm-hmm. radio audience.
Yeah. And you live in Pullman, do you?
Yes, I'm a Pullman artist. I used to teach at Washington State mm-hmm. University, but now I'm not teaching anymore. I'm retired from that, but I'm not retired from being an artist.
Well, isn't that the ideal? After all those years of splitting yourself, now here you are, totally back to the reason you did it.
Yeah, right.
And so let's get into the reason you did it and back up or disagree with, if you like, anything Blair said about about telling stories about the idea that motivates your art.
Well, I started out seriously painting back in the abstract expressionist period of art. And so for years, I claimed that I was mainly interested in the formal aspects of visual art, color, space, dynamics of tension in the picture format and all that. Well, it turns out that I'm really very involved in storytelling, but it took a while for me to figure out that about myself. I went to a little opening I had, a little show I had at UPS, and it was a show of woodcut prints, about 20 images. I looked at the show, and I realized that I'd been working with the element of humor. Every one of these prints had the element of humor in it, and it took some unusual circumstances for me to learn this about my own work. And folks recently have commented on my telling stories and all this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll interrupt you just by saying that four of the images in front of me, as I, you know, that are here on the Art Spirit website, are skeleton mowing the lawn, Guzzling Gal 2, Guzzling Gal 1, and skeleton painting, which do have all of that whimsy about them.
Yeah.
And those are actually stencils that when my husband and I had the opportunity to visit Pat's studio to begin to curate works that we wanted for the show, I looked up on the ceiling and he had these wonderful stencils just pinned to the ceilings. And it quickly reminded both my husband and I of the stencils that Harold Belays would create in order to develop his enamel work. And then that started a story. We asked Pat, you know, how do you use these? I'll let you go from there.
Well, I did ceramics as my main media for about 25 years. And I figured out how to use cut paper stencils to put my imagery on my ceramic pieces. And then from there, I started using these cut paper stencils to create paintings. And when you came along, you saw kind of what was left of a bunch of stencils I had put all over the inside of the studio for fun. And over the years, some fell off and some, I don't know, were discarded or something. And there were some left, thankfully, and you picked up on their aesthetic value as art in their own right, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and then right above that on this group of many images on the website are two black and whites. The Bug Paints a Picture, which you had alluded to, and in a way that title gives you that one. And then the other of Whiskey River with presumably a bunch of whiskey bottles floating down the river, and probably if one sees it in the real and in the grown, there's a whole lot more details there.
Uh-huh. Well, that's the title of a famous country and western song, right?
Sure.
From the 50s,
sure.
I believe, or maybe the 40s.
Yeah.
And I've gotten quite a few good ideas about pictures, drawings, and paintings from music I've heard over. You know, rock and roll, blues, country and western. Country and western is pretty rich in creating images in your head. So, good point of departure.
Just simply from the lyrics of the song.
Yeah.
Even the title of the song, as you mentioned, with Whiskey River. This is Patrick Seiler, who is one of the two artists in this gallery. And so now everything we've talked about so far has been the black and white things. Now talk about going from, you were saying a minute ago, you had done a lot of clay and things like that, but now back to two-dimensional art. Talk about getting back into color.
Well, you know, I worked doing just drawing for years, and I just kind of got a real itch to turn all these drawing ideas I had over the years into actual paintings and using color as an expressive element in my artwork.
And So when you did this, then did color take you into some new places? I mean, Blair has already mentioned how you've done those big frames and let the artwork blend out into the frame. But what other places has color taken you in your storytelling?
Well, I would say, you know, color in itself is a very expressive element. But I think I mainly use the color and the paint quality to carry out the idea of the original drawing or graphic image or graphic expression.
Yeah, and so and then back to Blair. Talk about the therefore out of all of the possibilities you had from Patrick Seiler, how did you How did you narrow down to what you were going to put in the show? And
well, that's always the hard question, isn't it? And in fact, we generally over-select. I am both excited and saddened to say that we chose three very large canvas works by Patrick that, in fact, did not make the wall just simply because of their size. They varied between 13 and 18 foot long.
Not enough
paintings.
Wall.
Not enough. Well, I have enough wall, but then it would be that and like two stencils. And I was thought. But I am proud to say that one of those will be making our show that we will be hanging for First Friday in Spokane, February in Barrister.
Oh, at Barrister.
So, please,
oh, yeah, you would have a nice amount of room to do that.
Yeah, and we've got one in particular, military bar, that is going to be hanging there, and it's an awesome piece. And again, the depth of story in this piece is just phenomenal. You know, how to select, I try very hard not to pre-curate. It's difficult to curate off-site, if you will. Mm-hmm. But we'll start with the stencils. I think that they have such a rich story when you are alluding to what they served a purpose as in the artwork. So those were just a natural for me. They were also a natural, back to our previous conversation, because they offer an entree-level piece for new up-and-coming buyers. So these stencils that are really intricate and fun and, again, tell a humorous story more often than not, are coming in at $650 to $800, and that's a wonderful. So we chose a lot of those because we wanted to introduce this new audience, if you will. And then there's no good answer to give you. Just you choose, and then you don't know until you start laying out. Yeah.
So that's half of the show, Patrick Seiler, yes, and his work. And then we turn to Tandon Lunder. And so why don't you introduce Tandon to us?
Thank you.
First I'll say hello, Tandon, and good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. So Tandon and I met quite a few years ago, really when I met him as both an up-and-coming entrepreneur and creative in the world of leatherwork. And he built a beautiful company by the name of Thrux Lawrence and builds these gorgeous bags that are just a huge hit and success all over the world. But then 5 years ago, when working again with Harold Belays and asking him to reintroduce his belt buckles in a larger number. Harold used to bring us about a dozen buckles a year, and they'd sell out quickly. Harold's response was, "I don't know if I can physically do 100 buckles." And I said, "Let me introduce you to this young craftsman who I think would be awesome." And Tandon really just began this level of artwork, or this style, I'll say, 3 years ago, four years ago?
Yeah, 3 years ago.
Yeah. And it, again, deep in story. So in each of the works, you're going to see a primary figure or figures, whether it be a historical figure or a cultural icon like Evel Knievel. But what always excites me about the storytelling of Tandon's pieces are the backstory and research that go on to develop the background of the works. So I can stand in front of one of his pieces for hours reading the articles or the advertisements that he's picked up. I've learned more about Nell Shipman sitting in front of his Nell Shipman piece this last week than I ever thought I needed to know.
Okay, well, let's let you come in on this and this story idea. First, about the image. Tandon Lunder, or Tandon Lunder, and again, if you've gone to the artspiritgallery.com website, you can see these. There's a dominant photograph of a historical figure,
yes,
and then just all kinds of stuff overlaid and underlaid and around. And so, talk about what you're doing with this.
A lot of the work is described as like mixed media portraiture work. And it stemmed from reading lots of biographies as a boy and coming up with the visuals of reading a book of you're trying to come up with what is this person's story visually. It's the creative aspect of it. And later on, finding my hand in art has been retelling those biographies visually. So it's taking footnotes of the history of an icon or an individual and and kind of putting in their interests. So they're interested in a certain subject matter. So there's graphics that get inlaid with that. And then there's the time and place as far as when they would have been like either famous or prominent in their work. It's a broad range of portraitures. It goes from cowboys and Indians to Bridget Bardot and Marilyn Monroe. So it's really diversified, and it's not so much a specific interest in one type of life, just in a life that was well-lived or exaggerated or large and attractive. And so visually, it can represent well to someone's interest in a certain individual. So you'd have a lot of commission work coming out of someone saying, my favorite person is John Wayne, and I would love an art piece based upon his life. And so you can dive into the history of his movie career and more of his, just details that come out. And then, so it really works well to bring in old pop art reference. It works well to bring in multiple mediums. So pieces will get diverse from airbrush to watercolors to markers, spray paint. So it really is truly mixed media. It's not just combining two mediums. I mean, there's been pieces that have 10, 12 mediums on it. And so it's very non-traditional. It's not educated. It's more just drawn from an aspect of creative fun. Mm-hmm. So,
well,
yeah.
Two levels of commentary. Technically, since we've invoked his name already, I think of Harold Blaze's simple self-description, I make stuff. And it sounds like you have that same attitude, that you are going to create, you are going to
yes.
use whatever technical thing you need
right.
to do
it's
to
the,
do what you need to do.
The end result is whatever means it took to get there. So it doesn't have to be formal. It can be very loosely done. It can be very refined. But at the end, when you see one of these pieces, you do get intrigued by an initial, bust you get the initial feel of who you're going to be reading about. And then as you get closer to the piece, you're going to start reading more of their quotes, or you're going to read more of their backstory, or old newspaper clippings about them, or old photographs. Or so it yes. really, like you said, Blair, you read more and more into these pieces, and it
I
can
do.
Take you quite a long time to decipher them.
So I have a question about Boy General, which
yes.
is featured in this particular show. And the primary image is of a very young General Custer.
Yes.
Before he was a general. You said the image is of his graduation
of
West Point. You have a quote there that just intrigues my husband and I very much, and I'll read it, that's incorporated in the piece. And it says, when a man decides to shoot visiting relatives, he can't afford to miss.
Yes.
Is this an actual quote?
So that's not a quote. That's a lot of the bringing in some humor into these pieces where so that was an old Kodiak advertisement from the 50s. And so it was an advertisement that they're selling a camera and saying, so when the visiting relatives come into town, you can't afford to miss a photograph of them. But out of context, it just plays beautifully in the fact that it's like, it kind of ties in with
Custer.
With Custer, even as abominable as a character as he has history to be known for, as well as just the side of him as the figure he played in the history. So,
right.
And then that kind of jumps off into a bunch of my Native American pieces where it's kind of telling the opposite side of the story as far as not the cowboy side, more of the other side. And so it's been, and that was all my upbringing, reading about, Chief Joseph and Sitting Bull and just loving the imagination of it. And that these guys were around our local area at one point, and they were really, they were here before this community was here, but we're walking kind of the same grounds. And so to tell that story and to incorporate old maps of the inland Northwest into the pieces and old photos I found in basements, and just try to build a story. And kind of that, going back to that younger art audience you're talking about, these pieces are visually heavy, so that the younger generation has lots to look at. They have lots to read. It is something that's not a simple study. At the same time, it can rest easy on a wall and not have to be deciphered. You can just look at it real quick and then walk away from it. Or if you had the time, you could go up to it and study.
Which is important if you're going to live with a piece of art. That it doesn't become invisible to you.
Exactly. You want to walk back to it and kind of find new. Even pieces I've done, I have not read all the material or all the photos, haven't studied them. So you go back to a piece, and it's exciting even for me as the artist to walk back and study a piece.
This is Tendon Lander, and his. And his piece is what was the title you gave to the mixed media portraiture.
They're Americana.
Yeah. And a bit more about you. So between that and making metal belt buckles, what's the other range of your arts and enterprises?
So Thrux Lawrence, I started when I was 21 at the time, and it was just high-end leather goods, and it kind of curated me into taking an interest into retail and more of being involved in the community, and recently purchasing the old commercial printing building downtown Coeur d'Alene and renovating that into a space that will be studios for creatives. So there's about 8 studios available, and they're set up with ventilation and old mop sinks, and they're like refined industrial, and they're for artists to come and lease out and do their craft. And there's a big hallway corridor where people can kind of interact with these artists and kind of shop them in like a retail environment. So it's just kind of promoting arts and culture in Coeur d'Alene and kind of promoting the next generation of artists.
Have you opened this yet?
It will be opening in February, end of February.
And so then it'll probably have actually reached its potential when people start splashing paint on the walls.
Exactly.
And it loses its pristine look.
That's what it's for. Is that artists come in here, well, can I get this place dirty? I'm like, come to my studio. You should see how messy it is. And it's supposed to be paint on the walls. It's supposed to be a used space. And it's an insight into a world that's not commonly seen. Like someone can walk up to your studio and see an artist at work and kind of get involved in that process of, oh, that's an art piece half done, which most would not ever see. They'd only ever see a finished product. So it kind of gives more of a heartstrings there.
Blair, that's a great legacy on the
Arts Ed Collab and
on everything. I mean, on everything. Certainly on the Art Spirit Gallery and the things that the Art Spirit Gallery was spinning off too.
Our intention to teach the business of art, and that's why relationships like this with Tandon and even Pat. I mean, Pat has helped so many young artists come forward and teach them the business of art and how. How can you stay a working, thriving artist in your culture, wherever it might be? And that is something that we do proudly as a legacy of Steve Gibbs.
Great. Yeah. The Art Spirit Gallery, the opening is from 5 to 8 tonight. So you guys have a busy day ahead. And then your wintertime schedule is Wednesday through Sunday, right?
Wednesday through Sunday, 11 to 6.
11 to 6 for the Art Spirit Gallery. And, of course, all of the other events on what's your name for it, Second Friday?
We have Art Walk. Interestingly enough, during the winter months, they change it to Music Walk. We still, of course, are unveiling new art shows, but tonight from 7 to 9, we'll be featuring Tommy G, a blues musician, in the gallery. So.
And the other guy, and there's musicians elsewhere around
all over.
Around town at the galleries. So Blair Williams, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for bringing these people in. And Pat Seiler, a pleasure to encounter your art and meet you. Thank you
for the opportunity.
Yeah. And to meet you, Tandon.
Yes, thank you very much.